Hi, everyone. Welcome to another exciting session of the Lambda Test XP Series. Through XP Series, we dive into a world of insights and innovation featuring renowned industry experts and business leaders in the testing and QA ecosystem. I'm your host, Kavya, Director of Product Marketing at Lambda Test, and it's a pleasure to have you with us today. Today's session is particularly compelling as we explore the transformative concept of the zero-bug revolution in software quality. But before we dive in, let me introduce you to the guest on the show, Rupesh Garg, CEO and Chief Architect of Frugal Testing. Rupesh is a visionary in the software testing industry, known for his innovative approaches and strategic foresight. With extensive experience and a deep understanding of both technology and business strategy, Rupesh has steered Frugal Testing to impressive heights, fostering a culture of innovation and customer-centric solutions. And in today's session, Rupesh will share his insights into how the zero-bug revolution is reshaping software quality and how this approach is not just an ideal, but a practical and achievable goal in modern software development. Additionally, Rupesh will also address potential challenges, provide strategies to overcome them, and ensuring the successful adoption of the zero-bug methodology in your projects. So let's jump straight into the heart of the discussion. Rupesh, why don't you tell our audience a bit about yourself and Frugal Testing?
Okay, sure. Hello, everyone. Myself, Rupesh Garg. In terms of industry experience, I started my career in India, and then I moved to US for higher studies, and then I worked over there, and then for the last 10 years, I've been working in India. And about 6 years back, we started this company called Frugal Testing. Initially, we were a SaaS product company, but we later on during COVID pivoted into services company. And so we are right now providing majorly around the testing services, functional testing, automation testing, API testing, load testing, security testing, the whole gamut of testing services, and bit of dev and cloud services also. We have done work with about, I think, more than 150 clients till now in the US, India, Singapore, Dubai, and Malaysian market. And we are about 80 people company right now, based out of Hyderabad, Gachibowli. That's overall about us. I think then we can go into questions. Yes.
Thank you, Rupesh. So starting off with the very first question, how can zero bugs be realistic for all projects? How do we go about setting achievable goals?
Okay, very good. I think zero bug revolution, I know we have used this word everywhere or in many of our podcasts also. But zero bug revolution is not which we can achieve in one shot. But it's a granular journey. It's a step-by-step journey, and we will have to set it up on every quarterly goals kind of thing. And once we set it up in that one, and we can definitely achieve this goal, or at least we can come. I would say not achieve. I would say we can come down our bug leakage very drastically every quarter, and over a year time frame or 2 year time frame, we can see significant changes. That is how most of the large companies are managing, and that is how we are trying to implement this kind of framework also for our very small scale clients. Like I'm talking about large scale companies like Facebook, Microsoft. That is how they manage, and we are trying to implement a mini version of that one for our clients also. And one of the things we are trying to focus is on better, culture angle of the issue. And then number two is also about the tools, AI tools, which I'll talk about it little, I'll talk about it in the coming minutes also on a little more further on this one. Yes.
So thank you, Rupesh, for sharing that, to begin with. It's an interesting point about how you need to basically break it down into smaller goals, I believe, in order to sort of implement it. Moving on to the next question that we have, right? What specific tools and techniques can help prevent bugs early in development?
Okay, very good. Yeah, I mean, see, basically the whole problem I would divide into people, process, and technology. One is the people angle of it, that we should have that kind of QA engineers which are adaptable to the new technologies. We have a more collaborative mindset. and we have a more sprint driven people, not in a waterfall model, which is extremely so. And anyhow, even we are I'm also realizing that right now, even be it large companies or small companies, most of the companies are moving to sprint model, which is almost a 2 to 4 week cycle, not 3 to 6 month cycle which were used to be 15 years back. Same thing on the tool side. There's a lot of changes happening, even like with the LLM models arrival, even we are using a lot of even with the ChatGPT, we are able to solve a lot of problems in terms of test case generation, especially, or test data generation also. And some of the fixes in our code bases also, we are able to take help, for that one. And apart from that, there are several tools which are, which are being used in the market, which I feel are definitely giving a little sort of edge over over the regular testing cycle, and obviously reducing our speed by increasing our speed by 20-30%, or maybe reducing the effort by 30%, roughly like that. So some of the tools like TestTim we are using for functional automation, which uses AI to generate test cases and then do a heat map analysis on top of it. Jenkins, which is being used by a lot of people in the market, and there also we are using some of that one also, and then with the AI features of that one, that is helping us to move much faster. And then same thing comes with Apply tools. If you have a very heavy websites or a heavy mobile apps which are having lot of pages, it's very difficult to test those applications in a very it's very difficult to test so many pages, and either you need to develop some kind of automation framework, and then if we have some kind of self-healing automation framework, that is what makes it different. And we have looked at it that Apply tools is helping us to create a AI framework on top of the UI testing also. So those kind of some of those kind of tools which really help, especially from AI implementation in the testing space. And then ChatGPT obviously I think is the number one tool which is helping to reduce a lot of investor time for trivial work sort of thing. Yeah, that's it.
Thank you, Rupesh. Very interesting, because at LambdaTest Asheville, we've been focusing on bringing in new AI features such as AI powered root cause analysis or auto healing features into our existing products, so that we can make it very seamless for the testing community. And interestingly, what you shared about the techniques such as sprint model, creating a collaborative environment, and how all these tools with AI features are making, all of it combined are potentially making such a big impact on speed and accuracy when it comes to bug prevention. So yeah, thank you for sharing that. Moving on to the next question, how can we address resistance to the zero bug approach from teams used to older workflows?
Okay. Yeah, I think that is all about people part of it. When we say people, process and technology framework, in that one, people and process part of it, which we need to address. And we can obviously start with a very small POC or very small subscaled part of implementation of these tools and self. Major part of the problem comes in, we need to have self-healing automation frameworks or self-healing test cases frameworks, and also automated execution, which is integrated CI/CD cycle. So that I think that can come, number one is from the test management angle or managerial angle. It can come from the adoption angle. And number two, costing angle, they can have issues, which we can address from that by taking a small scale work, proving that there is ROI, though there is initial upfront investment, number one. Number from the on-floor engineers angle, we need to have more adaptable engineers and with a better IQ, fundamental IQ, I would say, which will help to make sure that people are wanting to acquire new skills. So obviously, whenever we are doing a pilot also, we need to take a team which is more adaptable and more open for change, rather than taking a very small a team which is very slow to change. So if we implement through them, then others will be also convinced that there is a return coming on the investment for this effort. And then the rest of the organization will follow, or the rest of the sub-units, I would say, not even organization, sub-teams will follow the same rhythm, whichever we are implemented in the team one. The rest of the team, up to team X, they will implement it, sort of thing.
Awesome. Thank you for highlighting how more or less like a cultural change within a team can help drive improvement or help drive scalability at large and also help with project deliverability, speed, and so on. And moving on to the next question that we have, are there any downsides or hidden costs to the zero bug approach that you have come across so far?
Zero bug approach, IMDC, all this, one of the biggest issue comes with all these are money intensive initiatives and effort intensive initiative. It's all same sort of like you look at it, automation testing. Initially they take a lot of money and effort, but after a few months you can see the return on that investment. Same thing comes with the zero bug approach also, because we are implementing a lot of AI tools. We are trying to hire maybe more expensive engineers, because when we are implementing more sophisticated tools, we need those kind of engineers who really get the point and on whom there is not that much of micromanagement need to be done for them to acquire that skill. So in that sense, those people are we need those kind of people who can help us to implement. So obviously I would say more expensive teams in a direct form, and initially the team size may also grow. Because you will have to have a older style of working team and then a new POC slash initiatives team. But as you implement, and then also you might need to spend a bit on licenses part also. But after 3 to 6 months, once you have implemented all of it, you should be able to get rid of some of the effort in the older teams and then sustain with the newer effort on the newer teams only, which might be more expensive teams, but they will be more faster, more adaptable, and more eventually more open for new ideas. Like one of the ideas always comes that how Facebook manages such a large application hardware, and then obviously you cannot have very outdated engineers. You need to have very best of the engineers even in your QA department to manage that kind of infra when you're managing a couple of lakh servers. So it's not like managing 2 to 5 machines on a AWS farm. So those kind of then you need those kind of observability engineers, those kind of software is on top of it, and then those software is understanding the those software is on top of it also. You need those IQ kind of people. So that initial investment may be higher, but after I think after over the time frame, obviously these are very highly returning ROIs initiatives.
Great. That is, I think, a very on-point answer to the question because it also sheds light on both sides of the coin, right? I mean, there is initially an upfront cost, but then the benefit from a long-term perspective is much, much higher because overall, as you said, once you bring in the resources, the right resources, you're able to also ensure that the productivity is increased, the kind of turnaround time is also increased and so on. So yeah, eventually at the end of the day, the goal is to bring out focus on quality. So as you said rightly, I think from a long-term benefit is what we should focus on. Moving on to the next, yes, go ahead,
Yes,
please.
even we have like implemented in even not in testing also, we have implemented in our marketing framework also. We have implemented a very expensive framework right now. In last 2 years, we implemented a very expensive framework. Initially, the cost was very, very high, I felt, and other people are sort of laughing at me that hey, you are spending so much money. We don't even get it. Like, why you are spending so much money? And but what I felt that in automation is the need of the hour. You cannot even generate leads. You cannot generate meetings. You cannot get new business if you are working in the older style. Like for example, if you look in the marketing field, older style has been always cold call people, try to persuade the prospect. But new style of marketing has been more from branding, positioning, better messaging, or better. Like even we are doing this podcasting thing. This also can be said to be a subtle marketing tool. So for the to implement podcasts, to implement a lot of other initiatives in marketing also, number one, you need tools. Number two, you need a more sophisticated people in your department. It cannot be run by old style of telecallers who are only doing brute calling every morning, and people are getting irritated with their calls. So same thing we felt. Now we felt we are getting ROI of our framework. Say it's the same thing I feel even for our dev teams or product management teams or testing teams. once we have implemented even AI tools, some of the AI tools which are like really increasing speed, it is giving us a lot of efficiency. Like we were doing website testing, our own website. So, and then we were getting lost. We were saying, wow, these pages are growing like hell. We don't even now making a tree structure. I need to hire one guy. And then every day the developer changes the tree structure and it's a headache. Then we said, maybe there must be a tool which does a reverse mapping of the software, of the website. And then we found a software which sort of makes a mind map of the website. And once we make a mind map, every day morning we can make it. And it tells you the changes which happened from the last code release. So it makes our life very easy. I don't need any resource in office. I can just give that hyperlink of the website to that software myself and create a, you know, tree structure out of it. That's it. So, yeah, those kind of things. I mean, for that one, that's why I was saying more sophisticated engineers, obviously, you need in your team. And then you need to invest some money on the tools also.
Yeah, very interesting, because this is the same strategy that you sort of implemented when it comes to quality engineering is what you have sort of implemented across different domains within your or functions within your organization. And I think that would be a good learning for organizations that are starting small, perhaps, and even those who are at a larger scale, right? I mean, because the way the teams are structured these days, the whole purpose is for those teams to be more agile in nature, right?
Yes.
So from that sense, this definitely, automation definitely hits with that.
Yes. Great. Yeah.
And moving on to the next question, what other metrics can measure the effectiveness of the zero bug approach on software quality?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest metric is always the defect leakage. That is the only metric which is the final verdict about your product or about your work done. For example, if you look at a CEO, their biggest verdict is always top line and the profitability of the organization. Otherwise, everything else is a pretty much no value metric for them. Yeah. Same thing for a QA teams, it will be, or other product teams also, it will be biggest metric will be how many defects are getting leaked. And number two, how much effort we are burning. Are we burning more effort every year? And is our effort stabilizing and the budget stabilizing and every year or coming down? If those kind of metric we can measure, number of people deployed, number of production incidents happened, number of effort burned and the cost of the effort burned, and in terms of cost, which can be in the software and the hardware angle and the human resources angle. If we can manage through that one, we know, are we doing how we are doing as compared to last year. And another thing, obviously comes in team management is also how much your QA stack is dependent on different people. For example, if people are leaving, is your stack will fall apart or will the stack will remain there if people leave? Because sometimes we have built a stack which is very, very dependent on that particular person or a few engineers. And once they leave, even that stack goes away. Nobody else can get it. Have we built a stack which is replicable, which other people can get it, and which other people can easily follow? So those kind of things I would say, yeah, in which we need to measure our team's output or our own output, sort of.
Thank you, Rupesh. That really helps. So understanding all these different multiple metrics can definitely help. But so just from a high level perspective, I want to list down a few so that it becomes easier for our audience to understand. Defect leakage is one. Production incidents is one. Cost of the effort is one. Is there anything else that I'm missing out?
Cost of the tools.
Cost of the tools, of course.
Yes.
Yeah. So four of these. Great. Thank you so much for sharing this. And moving on to the next question that we have, right? Can you also highlight some of the real world challenges that were encountered during the zero bug implementation? And how did you go about overcoming those challenges?
Okay. Yeah, one of the examples I can tell, we did with a Singapore-based client. It was a fintech company where we had a scalability issue for the product. It was a fairly complex API product, with the microservices. We did the engagement was for, I think, about 3 months. And we ran, we did a full performance testing and scalability exercise, and we were able to bring down the response time quite drastically, almost by 1/50th of the response time. So what were the main things we implemented was that we took help of we not only did the front end testing, but we did the API testing, load testing also. Number three, we also collected data on the back end on the bad performing SQL queries. Number four, we looked at each API and the server architecture also, like is the load balancer working well? Are we having right memory, CPU utilized on the servers? By optimizing all of that one, we were able to reduce a lot of HTTP error codes, 50x error codes, 40x error codes, and we were able to pretty much move into HTTP 420x response codes, which gave it a huge, basically the application became stable, number one. Number two, the response time became much faster. So that is the one thing we implemented. One more thing I can tell you, which we have just implemented for like one of the clients for which we had, it was like a utility client where what they do is like if you look in US or Europe, people like, hey, the metering data comes manually, right? The electricity bills, water bill comes by hand. But normal in advanced markets, the bills don't come by hand or by email. They are collecting the live dashboards and they're sort of sending automated emails or SMS. And you can only check the dashboard yourself by going to that particular website. So we had that kind of client, which is sort of like they come in the smart home category in India, and which is being implemented at very, very few places right now in Indian market. So we did that kind of automation testing for them, or BI dashboard testing for those kind of clients. And then we were dealing with a telemetry database and almost up to 20 million rows and a very, very sizable DB. And then there we implemented we implement PostgreSQL, we implemented also SQL, we implemented Python, Selenium with Python. With that one, we were able to bring down, we were able to automate the whole dashboard process and also capture the response time. And then plus also check the backend data if it is stored well or not. Basically, like if I'm managing very, very large DB, it's very difficult for me to understand, am I having right data in my tables, or how do I check? How do I make sure? So that kind of framework we built. So that is another example. And then one more thing which I've seen about LLM model implementation, which we have initiated now in last 1 year, through which ChatGPT creating a lot of functional testing cases, helping with the test data. That is also saving a lot of time. Like I was talking about even number three, that tool, I forgot what the name tool, which is doing a reverse mapping on the website. So if people are involved in very front-end simple website testing, not complex back-end products with business logics, then those kind of tools can be very helpful. And they can really help you to find very quick bugs and move you faster. Because one of the tenets of zero bug revolution is that find bugs very fast and very early. Means like a sort of a monkey testing into which you find bug, which normally people call it shift left also, that try to find bug as early as possible. Or even by hours, it's very beneficial. If it's a sprint of 2 weeks, if you find in day one or two or three, the bugs is one lot more, can be higher chance of resolved than the last day of the sprint, because then anyhow, all the work is already done by the dev team. You can't bring changes on the last night. So that way. So yeah, these are a few cases I can talk.
These are all fantastic case studies, and congratulations to your team for successful implementations of all those. I think this really showcases the value of how zero bug approach can be implemented across different industries and in different use cases, right? Especially given the real world scenarios that you just shared with our audience. Thank you. Moving on, Rupesh, on to the last question of the day. How can organizations ensure that zero bug philosophy becomes ingrained and sustainable in the long term?
I'm the ingrained. One is like there need to be management or the management support for this initiative. And then number two, I think there need to be some additional budget allocated maybe initially, which will help them to move fast, deploy that kind of things. And number three, the company need to be more, like I've said, saying about having teams which are more adaptable to these kind of changes. We need to find those early adopters, which normally in any new product deployment, or even when any company sells new product in the market, they find early adopters. And then they try to make sure that the product is getting adopted through them. Like Walkman in 1960s was implemented through that idea only, by finding early adopters. And that's how it became a rage till the point iPhone came. So that is why the Sony was so profitable at that time also. One is cultural angle, number tools angle, the skills angle, number three, like I was saying, finding early adopters, or I would say fast engineers in your team who can accept that idea, and then finding few engineers, managers or leads who are open to those kind of new ideas. And then you will find the backend teams, the followers, they will anyhow adopt it after 6 months, once one few teams have early adopted this approach and have shown the results also. Because it's not only adopting the approach, there should be some benefit also, tangible benefit in terms of cycle time reduction and the cost reduction. If that is achieved in one or two cycles or product cycles, then other teams cannot say no to you. They will have to implement these ideas. So that way. Yes, that's all.
Thank you, Rupesh. That has been very insightful, and it is of course inspiring to hear how you have sort of led the zero bug philosophy or approach and gotten it implemented in several organizations to begin with. And of course I hope that you continue on that successful journey. So as we wrap up today's discussion, Rupesh, wanted to check if you have any last words of advice that you would like to share with our audience today.
No, I think I've shared all my points. I don't have much points.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Rupesh, for sharing your insights. It was really interesting to hear how the zero bug approach can transform software quality and set new standards within the industry. I really appreciate your time and expertise in sharing these valuable strategies with our audience. And to our audience, thank you so much for joining us today. I hope you found this session insightful. Before we part, do subscribe to the Lambda Test YouTube channel for more episodes of Lambda Test XP webinar series, where we continue to bring you cutting-edge discussions from around the globe. Once again, thank you so much, Rupesh. Have a great day, everyone.